Right, morning. Today's daf and mitzvah is Lamed Zayin. Thank Lupin Foundation for sponsorship of the daf. Daf is learned Lezecher Nishmat Liba Gabriela Bas Shmuel. We're on the very bottom of Lamed Vav Amud Aleph. We are right now in the middle of a major sugya of the third parak of mitzvah, and that is Shomer Shemas Lo Shomer. You are a custodian. You are asked to watch an item. You then sub out the job to somebody else. So is that considered malfeasance? Is that considered just simple gross negligence? Or no, you're totally within your right to do so. So with permission granted by the owner to do so, so then obviously that would be fine. And the Gemara made that point at the conclusion of where we finished off yesterday. So that you go to the owner, you say to him, hey, is it okay if I subcontract the job of Shmira? So then he says to you, yes. Totally within your right, so then obviously it's within his right. But we're not discussing where permission was granted. We want to know, in the event that no further instruction other than you simply being the custodian of this item, can you sub this job to somebody else? Can you subcontract it? And the Gemara brought a machlokes between Rav and Shmuel. Rav says that you're going to be pater, you'll be exempt for doing so. In other words, it's not considered malfeasance. And Shmuel was of the opinion that no, that this is considered. Not a machlokes between Rav and Shmuel, it's a machlokes between Rav and Rav Yochanan. Rav is of the opinion that it's not malfeasance, it's not considered negligence. And Rav Yochanan is of the opinion that it is considered negligence. And the Gemara, as we went over yesterday, Rav Yochanan's argument is it's considered negligence because my intention was that you watch it. I didn't want you to give it to somebody else. I trusted you. I don't trust anybody else. And therefore, you're going to be the one that I wanted responsible. You hand it over to somebody else. That's considered negligence. And according to Rav Yochanan, the shomer, if something were to happen to the item, the first shomer is going to be on the hook. He's going to be liable. In the Gemara now, we find ourselves towards the bottom of Lamed Vav Amud Aleph. And Mesiv Rav Chama. It's four lines from the very bottom of the Amud. The Gemara now is going to be challenging based on the following. Let's say you give money over to somebody else, and what he does is he bundles up the money and he basically puts it in a backpack. In other words, he puts it behind him, literally. He puts the money behind him. Masrum Livno Obito Hakatanim. Or what the person does is that he hands it over to his children, his minor children. So in other words, putting the money behind you, handing it over to your minor children, or a third example of the Mishnah, now b'fneim shalok karai, or you just simply put it in a place that's not secure. So chayiv, shalosh shomer kederech hashomrim. So in all these cases, you are going to be liable because what you did was not shmira, meaning you didn't provide the necessary requisite shmira in order for you to be considered like you did your job correctly. And as a result of that, you are going to be chayiv in all three of these circumstances. That's the Mishnah. And the Gemara now makes what is a very simple diuk. Time at the Ketanim, Hagadolim, Pater. The problem is that you gave it to minor children. But what if you didn't give it to minor children? What if you gave it to adult children who are responsible people? So certainly a simple reading of the Mishnah would indicate that would be fine. This would be an excellent support for Rav, that Shomer Shemas Lo Shomer, that if you're one Shomer, you hand it over to another. So that would be fine. So the Gemara says, on my name, Alein, Vitzon, Shiei, Pikdom, Yad Acher. The Gemara says, what about the argument of Rav Yochanan, which is I only entrusted you and I didn't trust anybody else and I didn't allow you to give it to anybody else. Now, it certainly sounds like from the Mishnah that we are not taking into consideration this argument of Rav Yochanan. Amar Rava, so the Gemara says, in defense of Rav Yochanan, kol ha-mafkid, top of Lamed Vav Amud Beis, al-nas yishto vanavu mafkid. So the Gemara says, no, there are certain assumptions that are made within a shmira. If I hand it over to somebody who is married and who has children in his house, adult children in his house, there is an implicit understanding that he's not going to be the only one who's going to be watching it, but his adult children are going to be watching it, his wife is going to be watching it as well, meaning it's a family operation. So the Gemara says, so that's what the Mishnah means. When the Mishnah implies that giving it to his older children would be fine, yes, that would be fine, even if you held like Rav Yochanan would be fine, because the implicit understanding is that I'm not just asking him to watch it, I'm asking the family to watch it. The Amri Nahardai, Dekanami Diktani. Nahardai, when learning the same Mishnah, also arrives at the same conclusion with a simple diuk. And the diuk goes like this. Diktani, Osha Masron Lavno Vito Akatanim. He hands it to his son or his daughters who are minors, Chayev. Under those circumstances, you're going to be liable. Halivno Ulavito Hagadolim. The diuk is, it's your own children. And when it's your own children and they're adults, patur, you're going to be exempt. Bechlav de lachem lo shna gadolim ve lo shna katanim. Chayav. That would imply now that it's only when it's in family that that would be okay. But once you're going to somebody else outside the family, there it is malfeasance, whether it's considered, whether they're young or whether they're old. Dim kein lisnei katanim stama. Why didn't the Mishnah just simply say katanim? Obviously, the issue is not that they're minors, is that they're your minor children. That's the issue. Shema mina. So the Gemara says, so really all this is read right into the Mishnah over there. Amar Rava Hilchasa. Now Rava concludes on the matter, meaning this is now the Gemara's conclusion on the question of whether or not Shomer Shemasa L'Shomer is considered an act of negligence. Rava says, Hilchasa Shomer Shemasa L'Shomer, Chayev. Rava says that when you are a Shomer and you subcontracted to another Shomer, you are that is considered an act of malfeasance, and you're going to be Chayev for doing so. Let me buy Shomer Sacha Shemasa L'Shomer Chinam Degurui Gav L'Shmir Asal. And he says in here, it doesn't matter whether or not you were a Shomer Chinam. Sorry, if you were a Shomer Sacher, if you were a paid custodian, handing it over to an unpaid custodian, where there, that's inferior Shmira. There, of course, that's considered malfeasance. But we can even go in the other direction. Even if you are a Shomer Chinam, handing it over to a Shomer Sacher, which means that that is a greater level of Shmira, it's still considered malfeasance. My time. Now, why? Now, it's interesting, by the way. In other words, he basically is about to, he did Paskin like Rav Yochanan, which is that that's considered malfeasance. However, as we're about to read the next line of Gemara, note, the reason that he's going to give is not exactly the same reason that was given by Rav Yochanan. Rav Yochanan says it's considered malfeasance because when I handed it to you, I only trusted you. I didn't trust anybody else. Here, as we're about to read the reason of Rav, note, it's not exactly the same reason. The reason, says Rav, why this is considered no good is because, look, when it came to you, if we were in a situation where something happened to my item, I trusted you to make a shvua, meaning that I know you and I feel like you're going to be honest and that you will make a correct shvua. However, when you hand it over to somebody else and something happened to the item and now he's required to make a shvua, I did not want to put myself in a situation where I have to hear a shvua from him. From you, I was prepared to hear a shvua, but from him, I'm not prepared to hear a shvua. So Rava's reason is not exactly the same as Rav Yochanan. Rav Yochanan says it's a fundamental issue of I wanted you to watch and nobody else. Rava sounds a little bit different. I trusted your shvuah. I didn't trust his shvuah. Sounds a little bit different. Is there going to be an actual difference between the way Rava presented and Rav Yochanan presented? So you take a look at the second Tosfos on the Amud, and Tosfos says, yeah, there's going to be a little bit of a difference. Second Tosfos, he writes, At mehem libi shvuah lekach hecha shashamar arishon yachli shava al haones o shaya edim bedaver pater. So let's say, for example, according to Rava, if somehow, let's say Tosfos says the first shomer would be in a position where he can make a shvuah. Now, in general, that would be difficult. He wasn't the one who was actually watching the item. He subcontracted it to somebody else. But if we can concoct a scenario in which the first shomer would be able to make a shvuah to the original owner, so then, according to Rava, that would be fine. Or, says Tosfos, let's say witnesses came forward and witnesses attested to what happened. If witnesses attested to what happened, we don't need a shvuah, because now we know what happened based on the testimony of the two witnesses. So according to Rava, then that would also be fine. Remember, according to Rav Yochanan, under both circumstances, it would not be fine. That by virtue of the fact that you handed it over to somebody else, that by itself is considered malfeasance, being that I didn't trust him, I only trusted you. According to Rava, where the issue is only shvuah, so that means that if there is a scenario in which we can circumvent the Shavuah, so according to Rava, it would be fine. Read on in Tosfos, where he discusses this in a little bit more detail, but anyway, yes, there is a subtle difference between the way Rava said it and the way Rav Yochanan said it. Anyway, in terms of a conclusion, the Gemara concluded, Shomer Shemasa L'Shomer, that if you're one custodian handing it over to another, that is considered a negligence, and you, the first Shomer, are still going to be on the hook if anything were to happen to the animal. Are you allowed to? No, if you're the owner, according to Rava, according to Rav Yochanan, if you're the owner, you're going after the first shomer. In other words, the first shomer, can the first shomer go after the second shomer? Yeah, presumably. Okay, Itmar. Okay, we are going to have one more discussion, one more big discussion in Shmira, and that is the following. let's say there was negligence that happened to the animal, but the death did not come about directly through the negligence, but in the course of you being negligent, the animal died on its own. The Gemara gives a very specific example. Let's say you were entrusted to watch an animal. You were negligent in that you let the animal go onto the swamp. That's not an area the animal should have gone. You should have kept the animal on your property in a secured, fenced-in area. It went down into the swamp, but then the animal died a natural death while being out there. So, the question the Gemara now is going to deal with is the following. You were proshea, but the animal's demise, death, did not come directly as a result of your pshia. Are you going to be liable? Yes or no? Abai mishmei de Rava amar chai, Rava mishmei de Rava, Rava mishmei de Rava amar pater. So the Gemara quotes machlok chin Abai and Rava. Here it's a little bit intricate because they're both quoting their Rebbe. Rabbah, and they're both going in different directions, so it could very well be that Rabbah himself may have went in one or two directions on this issue, whatever. In other words, let's just simply learn it as a machlok chin Abai and Rava in terms of whether or not you're going to be chayv and pater. And the Gemara is going to give reasons for each one of them. Abai mishmei de Rabbah amar chayv kol dina delo dan ki hay dina lav dayana hu. And Abaye feels very strongly about this. He opens up with the comment that if you have a judge who doesn't rule in such a scenario that the shomer is chayev, he's not considered a judge. I mean, don't consider him a judge if he doesn't rule in this that the shomer is chayev. Why does he use such strong language in this case? In other words, it's very interesting that he feels so strongly about this. Now the Gemara says, now we know that we have a general debate that takes place throughout Shas, and that is the question of tchilas b'pshia v'sof ha'bonis, where let's say something starts off as being negligent, and then what ends up happening is onis. Something happens beyond your circumstances. So this is a question of tchilas b'pshia v'sof ha'bonis. So some are of the opinion that you look at the fact that negligence started the ball rolling, and the fact that it ended with ones, okay. But in other words, it started as negligence. And on the other side of this argument, you focus on the fact that it ended with ones, meaning yes, you were negligent, but it ended with ones. So if you take the position of tchilas b'pshiyav esof ha'bonis, that a person would be chayev. So over here, it's a no-brainer. Of course, you're chayev by you allowing the animal to go out into the swamp. That was a negligent act. Now that it died on its own, okay, but it started with a negligent act, so for sure you're going to be chayv. But Abaye says, but I'll go even one step further. El afila mandam or pater, but even if you generally subscribe to the idea of tchilas b'pshiyav esof ha'bonis is going to be pater, I'm still going to argue that in this case, the shomer is going to be chayv. Why? Hacha chayv my time and darmin and havla da'ag makadla. Because the death of the animal was not indirect. I think, says Abai, that the death of the animal came as a direct result of the animal being out in the swamp. The air in the swamp is thick and heavy. The animal breathed in the air. The animal died as a direct result of being out there in the swamp. So Abai says that I think this is not considered an indirect damage caused by you. This is direct damage caused by you allowing the animal to go out into the swamp. That is Abai's position. It's what? It's.
In other words, you're saying it's the swamp that did it, so it's not.
Yeah, but it's your allowance of the animal to go out into the swamp, and the death of the animal directly was caused by the swamp air. So, in other words, you're a shomer. That was a direct result of your negligence or shmira. That's a Abaye's argument. Rava mishmei de Rava amar pater called Diana de lo dain ki haidina lav Diana hu. And again, he also uses the same language where that if you're a judge, you don't rule the way I think in this case, and you're not considered a judge. Lo mi bain lamanda mit tchilas b'pshiyav esof ha'bonis pater de pater. Now, if you subscribe to the idea of that tchilas b'pshiyav esof ha'bonis is pater, in this case, you're going to be pater because that's exactly what this is. Start off as negligent, but then the animal died on its own. So if you subscribe to that, if you subscribe to pater over there, over here, you're going to be pater. But Rava says, but again, I'll take it even a step further. Ela fi lamanda merchayv hacha pater. My time d'amrina malacha mavis mali hacha mali hasam. Over here, the animal died on its own. So that means that it got a visit by the Malach HaMavis. The Malach HaMavis knows where you are under all circumstances. So you're gonna try to run away from the Malach HaMavis, but he is, in other words, he doesn't need any kind of update on your address change. He'll know. So the Gemara says that this is Rava's position, that when the animal died in the swamp, so yes, you were negligent in terms of letting the animal go out, but the animal didn't die because it was in the swamp. The animal died because it got visited by the Malach HaMavis. So so you're not going to be liable under those circumstances. So Ad Kan, this we have now Machlokes and Abaye and Rava in a scenario where you were negligent by allowing the animal to go out to the swamp. The animal then died on its own. So Abaye says you're going to be chayv. Rava says you're going to be pater. And they both feel extraordinarily strongly about their own positions. However, there are points of agreement between Abaye and Rava. The Gemara goes over both of these points. Umoda Abaye dihajo labe maru mesa de pater. Now, Abaye will said, here's where I'm going to concede. Let's say after the animal was let out into the swamp, you, the shomer, retrieved the animal. You then brought it back to its owner, and then the animal died. So the Gemara says, I'm going to agree that under those circumstances, you, the shomer, are going to be pater. My time da hahadrole, v'leik lamemar hevla da'ag makatla. There, you brought the animal back, and there, I will not attribute the fact that the animal spent some time in the swamp, that the animal died as a result of that. By virtue of the fact that it has survived the swamp, it has been returned back to the owner's house. So I will then say that under those circumstances, the shomer is going to be pater. Umo de Rava, and here's a point of agreement that Rava has with Abaye. Umo de Rava kol hecha de igneva ganav ba'agam umetik adarka be ganav de chayav. Here's where Rava says, I will agree if, let's say, the animal was, again, negligently left out in the swamp and then stolen from that location and then died in the house of the ganav. Rava says, under those circumstances, I'm for sure going to concede that at that point in time, the shomer is going to be responsible / liable. My taima. Dishavka malach hamavis bevesei de ganva havakaima. Because let's take the malach hamavis out of the equation. Let's say the animal at this point didn't die. Where's the animal right now? In the house of the ganav. Meaning that your negligence of allowing the animal to leave the protected area and go out into the swamp caused the animal to be stolen. So even without the malach hamavis, you're clearly in the wrong for basically letting the animal go out and allowing the animal to be stolen. So under those circumstances, you're going to be chayev. So this is Rava's agreement to Abaye. Amalei Abaye Rava l'didcha damar malach hamavis mali hacha mali hasam. Now, in a dialogue between Rava and Abaye, where Rava turns to Abaye, Abaye turns to Rava and says, look, let's go over your argument. Your argument was the Malach HaMavis will pay a visit to the animal regardless of where the animal is, and therefore the Shomer is not going to be liable. Let me ask you a simple question. Hi, Do'us for Rabbi Abba, Bar Mama, Rabbi Ami. Remember the dialogue that we had at the very end of yesterday's daf, on Lamed Vav Amid Aleph, where there was an exchange between Rabbi Abba, Bar Mama, and Rabbi Ami. Bishani Yilei, Bishnasal Abalim Rishos. Where, remember, we looked back at our Mishnah. In the case of the Mishnah, you had a socher, you had a renter, who then lent the animal out. And the Mishnah said that under those circumstances, and the animal died. So the shoel will have to pay the socher, at least according to the Tanakhama. And there, what we wondered was, wait a second. That's Shomer Shemasa L'Shomer. What happened over there? And the response that was given was, yeah, but he got permission. Meaning he went to the owner and he asked permission. I'm renting your animal. Can I lend it out? And the owner said yes. So the Gemara says, B'shenasin L'balam R'shos L'Hashil. That was the exchange based on our Mishnah. V'lei malei malach hamavis mali hacha mali hasam. So over there, out of curiosity, the animal died. According to you, Rava, the malach hamavis would kill the animal regardless of where the animal was. So if that's true, even if permission was granted, can we not argue that death is inevitable? And since death is inevitable, should it make a difference whether it died in the house of the shoel or whether it died in the house of the socher? So Amar Lei, so he says, so Rava says to Abaye, you know what? Okay. Let me ask you a question. Remember, on the issue of the argument of Rav Yochanan. Why is it that a shomer cannot hand over the item to another shomer? It's because the owner's argument is, I trusted you, I didn't trust anybody else. Why doesn't the Mishnah simply pose a problem with that? But you remember, according to me, the issue was a question of trusting of a shvua. So for me, the issue is a non-starter, meaning that I don't see the Mishnah as being a problem whatsoever. But according to you, where the argument is, I trusted you, I didn't trust him, so why doesn't the Mishnah pose a problem over there as well? So basically, Rava doesn't directly answer Abaye's question, but basically he says, look, that Mishnah serves as a difficulty according to you anyway, so basically let's leave that out of the discussion. Meisiv Rami Bar Chama. Okay, another challenge. Halal Rosh Yitzukim V'nafla Ein Zeh Onetz V'chayev. This is a Mishnah that's coming up later in the Masechta, and the Mishnah over here once again talks about various examples of a custodian and possible times that he's going to be negligent. The Mishnah discusses a scenario in which you took the animal to the top of a cliff, right? The word Rosh Tzukim, you should be, I don't know if you should remember, but we had this in terms of the Asir Lazazel, the animal that's thrown off a cliff. So he's taken off a very high cliff and then basically pushed to his demise. Over here, however, we're just talking about a simple case of a shepherd who was responsible for the animal, took the animal to the top of a very high and steep cliff. The animal died. We do not call this a case of ones. The shepherd is going to be chayv for doing so. So, now, from the mission, what it sounds like is that even though you took the animal to a very high altitude and there was very thin air over there, if the animal died without having fallen, so then the shepherd would be exempt. Now the Gemara says, "V'amai le'malei avir dahar katala inami uftina dahar katala." So the Gemara says, "Now according to you, Abaye, you said that the swamp air kills the animal. Can't you make the same argument in that case where if you took the animal to a high altitude, it's the thin air on the top of the high altitude that caused the animal's death? Or can't you also make the argument that by schlepping the animal to the top of a cliff, that was a very steep and strenuous climb to the top of the cliff, and maybe the animal died as a result of that? So according to you, Abaye, who gives such arguments of once the animal is no longer in a protected area, and once the animal dies, that's a shomer issue. The shomer is responsible. So the Gemara says, "Hacha b'maiskin she'alalamar shamein v'tov." So the Gemara's answer is no. The top of the cliff was an area of excellent grazing, right? Really shamein v'tov, good grazing on the top of the cliff. So what, that it was good grazing on the top of the cliff? Rashi says, "Derech haroim la'aloshan behemos laraos," meaning, because the grazing was so good on the top of the cliff, that's what the shepherds did. And since that's what the shepherds do, this is considered normal behavior and normal way of shepherding the animals. So the Gemara says, "Yachli nami." So the Gemara says, well, if that's true, if shepherds normally take the animal to the top of the cliff and the animal falls and dies, so then I don't understand the Mishnah. The Mishnah says you're liable. Why? This is what shepherds normally do. So the Gemara says, "Shayil alatokfa velo tokfa." The Gemara says, no, but that's still considered an act of irresponsibility on the part of the shepherd. Once you're on the top of the cliff, you know at that point in time that there is a risk of the animal falling off the cliff. You, the shepherd, have to hold on to the animal tight. The Gemara says, well, if that's true, then I don't understand the first part of the Mishnah, which is Altal Rosh Yitzukim V'nafla Hareze Ones. So the animal, if the animal goes onto the top of the cliff by itself and falls off the cliff, that falls under the category of ones, circumstances beyond your control, and you, the shepherd, are going to be putter. The Gemara says, well, the argument is, well, wait one second. If you're on the top of the cliff, you're expected to hold on to the animal so the animal doesn't fall. If you allow the animal to go to the top of the cliff, then you should be responsible there as well. So the Gemara says, "Lo tricha shetakfasava also takfasava yarda." So the Gemara says, "No. The reason why that's considered an ones is because the animal basically pushed its way to the top of the cliff, overpowered you, the shepherd. That falls under the category of ones. Rashi says, the very last Rashi on the Amud, Shetakfaso al karcha ve'altlo, ve'alta. The animal basically, against your will, went to the top. V'lo yachulach, but you just simply couldn't hold on to it. Shechazaka haisami menu, the animal is stronger than you. Under those circumstances, you're going to be potter, that falls under the category of ones.
Does the shepherd know
that
the animal is?
I mean, the shepherd tried his best. The way Rashi describes it, the shepherd tried his best to maintain the animal off the cliff, but the animal just simply overpowered him. Okay, and now finishing up the first mission of the third parak of Bamitzia. So we are going to now be discussing the halacha. In the Mishnah, we had the following scenario: you deposit an item by a socher. Let me start that again correctly. The second Mishnah, thank you. The second Mishnah of the third parak of Bamitzia, the Mishnah says that you rented an animal from your friend and then you lent it to somebody else. So, and the animal then dies while being under the property of the borrower. So what happens under those circumstances? In such a circumstance, the socher himself would have been pater because the animal died. That's considered a case of ones. And the shoel would be liable. And the Mishnah says that the shoel pays the socher the value of the animal. The socher is going to swear to the owner, and the shoel pays the socher. That's what the Mishnah said. On that point, Amar Rav Yossi, right? Rav Yossi then said in the Mishnah, "Ketzad hala osis chorer, but parasu shachavero elatachzer bar labalim." Rav Yossi says, "I don't understand. How can the renter profit from an animal that doesn't belong to him? He's simply renting the animal. So I can't imagine. This is such a strange conclusion. Strange meaning, I don't agree with the conclusion. How can you have the socher profiting from an animal that does not belong to him?" That was Rav Yossi's retort in the Mishnah. On that, now we'll see the Gemara. Rav Yossi Ketzad Hala Osis Chor BeParaso. We are now in the very bottom of Lamed Vav Lamed Beis. Amar Rav Yehuda Amar Shmuel Halacha KeRav Yossi. In the Mishnah, the halacha falls like Rav Yossi. It is interesting, meaning the argument of Rav Yossi is very strong. It's a very powerful argument. On the other hand, just know that the way the Mishnah presents itself, it's a machlokas between the Tanakhama and Rav Yossi. Generally speaking, when you have a Tanakhama, it usually is a reflection of the majority position. And that means then that we have a machlokas between the Rambam against Rav Yossi. So it is a little strange that the Gemara says very, very clearly, very unequivocally, that the halacha is going to be following like Rav Yossi, but the Gemara says it in the name of Shmuel. Amalei Rav Shmuel Bar Yehuda Rav Yehuda Amar Lam Shmuel Shmuel Chaluk Hayah Rav Yossi Af Berishona. Now we now know that in the case where a socher lends out the animal, and the animal then dies. So, which is the case of the second Mishnah, we now know that the halacha falls like Rav Yossi, who says that the owner is going to get reimbursed for the dead animal. Fine. What about now? That's why I started off making the mistake. What about the first Mishnah of the perek? Now, in the first Mishnah of the perek, you have an animal that was deposited by a shomer, and the animal was stolen from him. And what the shomer then says to the original owner is, "You know what? Let me pay you for the animal. And even though I could swear, and even though I can just simply exempt myself, but let me pay you for the animal." Under such circumstances, the Mishnah said, without a machlokas, that the shomer can pay for the animal and receive benefits from the animal, meaning that in the event the ganav is found and kefil is going to be paid, the shomer is going to be receiving the benefit of kefil. So, would Rav Yossi disagree in the first Mishnah? Now, at first glance, the answer is no. And there's a very big difference between the first Mishnah and the second Mishnah. You see, in the second Mishnah, the socher didn't reimburse the owner. the socher is simply benefiting, profiting from the animal without paying the owner anything. In the case of the first Mishnah, the shomer is actually paying the owner, reimbursing him, and yes, he may end up profiting from the animal, but he reimbursed the owner. So at first glance, one would simply say there's a very big difference between the first Mishnah and the second Mishnah. First Mishnah, there was reimbursement, and the second Mishnah, there is no reimbursement. The Gemara now quotes a tradition in the name of Shmuel that Rav Yossi also argued on the first Mishnah as well. That in the first Mishnah, the Shomer can't profit from an animal that doesn't belong to him, even though he reimbursed for the animal. So, Af Berishon, Halacha Gemosa, Wein Halacha Gemosa. We're in the very top of Lamed Zayin Amud Aleph, and now the Gemara's question is really simple. Good. Now I know that, at least according to Shmuel, Rav Yossi argues even on the first Mishnah as well. So now who does the halacha fall like? Amalei halacha yer Rav Yossi, af berishona v'halacha kamoso, af berishona. The Gemara says the halacha falls like Rav Yossi, even the first Mishnah, in Mernami, Amar Rav Elazar, halacha yer Rav Yossi, af berishona, v'halacha kamoso, af berishona. So, and then the Gemara quotes, in the name of Rav Elazar, the same basic idea. That Rav Yossi also argues on the first Mishnah as well, and the halacha falls like Rav Yossi. Vi Rav Yochanan Amar, moda haya Rav Yossi berishona, shikvar shilein. And Rav Yochanan says, no! Rav Yossi doesn't argue on the first Mishnah. Why doesn't Rav Yossi argue on the first Mishnah? Because the Shomer reimbursed the owner. So once the Shomer reimburses the owner, since he paid for the animal, so now the Shomer has the right to, if the ganav is found, benefit, profit from the animal and receive the kefal. So the Gemara says, now one sticking point on this, and that is, shilei min lo, shilei min lo. Wait one second. Rav Yochanan says, because the shomer paid for the animal, therefore he's allowed to get benefit from the animal. The Gemara says, v'amar Rabbi Chiya bar Abba, amar Rav Yochanan lo shilei m'shilei m'amish, ala kevin sh'amar harina m'shalem, afa pish lo shilei. So the Gemara says, wait one second, isn't it Rav Yochanan himself who said that the shomer doesn't actually have to pay for the animal once he makes a commitment to pay for the animal? So at that point in time, now he's going to be receiving, if there is any benefit from the animal. So Gemara says, fine, you're right. That's what we meant in the name of Rav Yochanan. Since he offered to pay, so therefore he's going to receiving a benefit. So, summarize, the Gemara now presents a machlokis, Amarayim, whether or not Rav Yossi disagrees with Mishnah number 1 of the third parak of Bamitzia. In the second Mishnah, the Gemara concludes the halacha is like Rav Yossi, that the renter can't profit from the animal that does not belong to him. Rav Yossi says that's just untenable, and the Gemara says, and that's a halacha, that the socher cannot benefit and profit from the animal in the event that he lends it out to somebody else and the animal dies. Socher cannot be receiving gains from such an animal. The money's going to go back to the original owner. What about the first Mishnah? So the Gemara presented a machlokas whether Rav Yossi, A, disagrees with the first Mishnah, B, even if he does the halacha fall like Rav Yossi? So the Gemara quoted in the name of Shmuel, A, yes, he does disagree, and B, yes, the halacha falls like Rav Yossi as well. That even though the shomer paid for the animal, he can't benefit from the animal, he can't profit from the animal, the kefal is going to go back to the original owner. Rav Yochanan disagrees with that point. Rav Yochanan says that Rav Yossi does not disagree with the Tanakhama of the first Mishnah of our Perek. He reimbursed, because he reimbursed, or as the Gemara edited itself, he committed to reimburse the owner, and once you do that, so then the shomer then becomes the de facto owner of the animal, and then if there is a profit, i.e. kefil, the shomer will receive that benefit. Okay. Amar Lishnayim, we are on Lam Zayin Amud Aleph, we are starting now the next Mishnah, this is now the third Mishnah of the third parak of Bamitzia. We have the following scenario. Now, this scenario should sound familiar. We did almost an identical scenario in the Mishnah in Yevamos. Now, I know the Mishnah in Yevamos is, generally speaking, not talking about money. It's talking about the mitzvah of Yibum. But if you remember, there was almost a nearly identical scenario. And the good news is that after going through the Mishnah, we're going to end up quoting the Mishnah in Yevamos again, comparing and contrasting our Mishnah here and the Mishnah in Yevamos. Let's first start off with our Mishnah. Case number one in the Mishnah, a guy goes over to two people and he says, look, I'm really sorry. Okay? I stole. And I know I stole from one of you too. Right? It was a It was a condominium, and they just, you know, the two houses were right next to another. And he knew he broke into one of the two houses, but he was, and now he totally wants to make amends. Right now, the only problem is he just simply forgot who he stole from. Oh, a second scenario. Listen, he goes over to two guys and he says, one of your fathers deposited money by me. Right? We were all very close. We were all very, it was a close relationship I had with both of your fathers. And one of them deposited money by me, but I'm going to be totally honest. I don't know. I don't remember who. I have the money. I just don't know which one of them deposited by me. So, in both of these cases, now in order to satisfy his obligation of reimbursement, he's got to pay back both of them, because he made the admission that he doesn't know who it belongs to. Next case in the Mishnah. Let's say two people deposited an item by him. Or in this case, I'm sorry, let's start off with money. Two people deposited money by him. One deposited $100, the other person deposited $200. Zeram Rishalim Asayim, Zeram Rishalim Asayim. And they both come back to him and they both say, okay, we'd like to withdraw our deposit. And each one now claims that they're the ones who gave him $200. One of them is obviously lying. So, no the Tanakhama says, okay, so here's what you're going to have to do. You're going to give each one of them 100, because you know for sure that each one of them deposited 100 by you. As far as the third 100, leave that in escrow until Eliyahu comes, meaning until we know any better, the third 100 is not going to be returned to either one of them. An obvious discrepancy.
Yeah, the second one is basically the cheater.
Yeah. I'm Rav Yossi, Im Kei Mahifzit or Ramai. Rav Yossi says, wait 1 second. So now there was a cheater, or at least somebody who attempted to cheat. And now, he didn't lose anything.
Yeah.
Meaning, he said that he was owed 200. He, in fact, was actually owed 100. He got 100. So he basically got away with trying to cheat. Wasn't successful, but he didn't lose money. So, Rav Yossi says, so under these circumstances, in other words, unless you can come up with some sort of Solomonic solution, you're going to hold all $300 in escrow until you know any better. Now, granted, by the way, that the one who deposited $100, obviously, he's losing. The one who deposited $200, he's losing even more. And he wasn't trying to cheat. But under these circumstances, that's what you're going to do, according to Rav Yossi.
Realistically, they say keep it until the old comes. I mean, for the past 2,000 years, what have they planned? I mean,
right. In other words, you're right. That's exactly right. Meaning the money will be kept in escrow in perpetuity. There must have been some sort of holding. Okay, for such a scenario. And the Gemara now is going to repeat the exact same point, but instead of using money right now, we're going to use the case of a utensil. One was valued at 100, the other one was valued at 1,000. Obviously a major discrepancy, much more than the 100, 200, 100, 1,000. Now each one of the owners comes back claiming that they are the proud owner of the more expensive kli. So, no sin is a So now what you're going to do is you're going to be returning the small utensil to one of them. You're then going to break, I don't literally mean break, but redeem the more expensive kli, and of that hand the value of the smaller kli to the other person. And as far as the contested money is concerned, so that remains in escrow until Eliyahu comes. I'm Rav Yossi, Imkei Mahifzit or Ramai. Again, Rav Yossi is going to counter with the same exact point. Well, somebody tried to trick and you're not rewarding, you are not punishing him, even though he was clearly trying to trick you. Rather, everything is kept in escrow until Eliyahu comes.
This is only a deterrent. Like when the person has said that you're going to be an Eliyahu, even the person who's cheating is going to say,
Exactly. In other words, but if we have to go through with the deterrent, we're going to go through with the deterrent, according to Rav Yossi. Now, Amma Misfeka Mafkina Mamona Valarm and Uke Mana Becheskas Mare. Look what happened in the first case of the Mishnah. The Ganav goes over to two people and says, I owe one of you 100. I'm really sorry, I don't know who. And he's got it out of his pocket, take out $200. even though he only stole 100. So the Gemara says, what? That's crazy. Meaning we have the principle of chazaka. Chazaka tells us that if it's contested money, you don't part with your contested money unless you know for sure that that person is owed the money. So Reminu, and the Gemara says, and I'm going to ask a stira, and we don't have to go anywhere else. We could stay right at our Mishnah. Shnaim sheif kidu etzel echad zeman av zem asayim zeo amr shalim asayim zeo amr shalim asayim nozul zem manav la zem manav asha yemuna chad shivav aliyahu. The second case of the Mishnah is a clear demonstration of when there's contested money, you don't have to part with the contested money. If people are clamoring over that money and you don't know who the owner is, you simply hold the money. You don't part with money that's contested. And you certainly don't have to go out of pocket to give more money away if various people are disputing who the owner of that money is. So the Gemara's first answer is Amalei Pekadon Nagazo Karamis, Gezo Davdi Sura Kansu Rabbana, Pekadon Davdi Sura Lo Kansu Rabbana. The first answer, which the Gemara immediately is going to acknowledge as an incomplete answer, is, well, in the first case we're talking about theft, in the second case we're talking about a deposit. You know, theft, we don't want the thief to get away with that action, therefore he has to forward money even though it's disputed who is the owner of that money. And in the second case of the Mishnah, we're talking about a pikadon. The Gemara says, but that's an incomplete answer, because if you remember, the Mishnah brings down two cases. Rami pikadon, pikadon, Rami gezel, agezel. Pikadon, pikadon, diktani, reisha, oaviv, shalachem, ehem, ifkid, etzli, manav, eni, odeze, who knows, and lezemanav, reminu. I'm sorry, lezemanav. In the first case of the Mishnah, we also have a case of pikadon, where the person says, one of your fathers deposited money by me, and I simply don't remember which one of your fathers. That's a case of pikadon, that's not a case of theft. And there, the Mishnah says the shomer has to pay both of them. So, and that's a case of that. He's not a ganav. He's just a regular shomer. Uriminu shnam shifkidu v'chulei. So Amar Rava Reisha Nase Kemishi Yifkidu Lo Kishnei Krichos De Havalei Lameidak Seifa Nase Kemishi Yifkidu Lo Bekrach Achad De Lo Havalei Lameidak Kegon Davkidu Tavari Bahadi Hadad Bechad Zimna De Amar Luhu Ant Gufaycha Lo Kaptidu Hadadi Anakabdinu. So the Gemara says, here's the distinction we're going to be making between the first case and the second case. You see, in the first case, the two people deposited money by him at two different times. And when people are depositing money by you, the shomer, at two different times, it is your responsibility to know who deposited how much money by you. Meaning, once you take on the responsibility of being a shomer, and when people come to you not at the same time, then it becomes your responsibility to know. And by you not knowing, that's you being negligent. In the second case of the Mishnah, the two people who deposited money by him came at the same time. Now, I know it's an ukimta, meaning the Mishnah didn't say this, but we are going to add this to the Mishnah now to provide a better understanding of the Mishnah. They came to him at the same time, and they're depositing money at the same time, different values. One's depositing 100, and the other's depositing 200, but they're coming at the same time. And so you see, under those circumstances, even though the shomer takes responsibility watching the money, he is not expected to know who deposited how much. Why? Says the Gemara, since they came at the same time and they handed him all the money simultaneously, that was clear evidence that they themselves are not that, this is not that an important piece of information of who deposited how much, since they're both coming simultaneously and they're both handing the money simultaneously. So if for them this is not such an important detail, so for the shomer himself, you can't expect the shomer to care as much, or I should say better, to care more than the actual depositors themselves. The Gemara says that's the difference between the Reisha and the Seifa. And let's just finish up. Rami Gezel Agezel Ketani Acha Am L'Shem Gezel Telecha Mechem Manevi Eni Yodei Eze Mechem El Aviv Shalacha Mechem Ifkid Li Manevi Eni Yodei Eze Eze Nosel Lezem Manevi Lezem Manevi. The Mishnah over here is talking about a case of Gzela, where he's admitting that he stole from one of the two, but he says, but I don't know which one of you two. So he has to go out of his pocket and pay the second 100. Uriminhu. And here comes now the Mishnah in Yevamos. Gezel echem echamisha ve'eni yodei ze mehem gazal. Zeh omer osi gazal ve'zeh omer osi gazal. He stole from one of five people. All five of them are now making the claim, I'm the victim. So this is a case now where the victim basically turns into an assailant. All five of them claim I'm the victim. So Maniach Zela B'Neimah Mestalek Div Rabbi Tarfon. So Rabbi Tarfon says, you, the Gazlan, are going to put the 100 in front of the five people and basically say, gentlemen, you guys work it out. Meaning, I only stole 100. I know I only stole 100. Each one of you five are claiming that you're the victim. I don't know. Gentlemen, you work it out. The mission Yavama says with absolute clarity that the Gazlan himself does not have to go out of pocket to satisfy each one of the victim's claims. So, now that mission Yavamas is going like Rabbi Tarfon. Our mission in the Gemara says is also going like Rabbi Tarfon. The Gemara says now, our mission is also going like Rabbi Tarfon, says the Gemara. Here is the basic difference between the Mishnah and Yavamos and our Mishnah over here. You see, the Mishnah and Yavamos, he's a Gazlan, and he is not himself forwarding that he would like to make reparations. So therefore, we don't have to take money out of his pocket. He stole 100, he admits he stole 100, and he could just simply put it down and say, gentlemen, work it out. In our Mishnah, if you read carefully our Mishnah, he's actually looking to make amends. He wants to do tshuva. Since he wants to do tshuva, so therefore he's going to have to go out of his pocket and pay each one of them. The Gemara says, read the Mishnah carefully and you will see that in the Mishnah, that makes a distinction between our Mishnah and the Mishnah over there.